interview with Mayor Johnny Ford, F-O-R-D, Tuskegee, T-U-S, K-E-G-E-E, Alabama, July 11th, 1974.
I wonder first if you could just give us, you know, briefly a little bit about your own background. I understand you grew up in Tuskegee.
Yeah, well, why don't I just give you a resume on my background?
Fine. And you were involved in Robert Kennedy's presidential campaign, correct?
Yeah, I worked in New York City for about, I went to New York City in 1964 and worked for the Boy Scouts of America. And through scouting, I met Robert Kennedy and Bedford Stuyvesant, and worked with Earl Graves, who was his administrative assistant. When he announced his candidacy, he asked me to join the staff, New York Senate staff, and to also work on the campaign effort. And I worked in advanced strategy. We normally preceded the senator in the primaries in Indiana, then to Nebraska, Oregon, and finally California, and of course in New York, one that never came off. But the campaign got us out across the country.
Why did you decide to come back here?
Like many young people who grow up in the South, with the illusion that you want to get away and go up north and other places, I was basically had the same idea and concept. But while in New York and away from the South, I always had that deep down feeling that I wanted to eventually come back home. Just a feeling. And finally, after the senator's death, it really took a lot of desire out of him. The senator's death, it kind of really took the interest out of it. And then, of course, we went to work for Vice President Humphrey and Muskie ticket, and of course, after that unfortunate defeat in November of 68, I guess. I came back home for Christmas, and during that vacation, I was offered a position here as the Model Cities Director, and I saw that as a chance to really get away from it. I just really thought for a while maybe I would get away for a while. But I had, this is home for me growing up here. I kind of went to New York to learn some things, to get some experiences, and when I got them, I wanted to come on back here and try to put them to work. So I came back in February of 1969. I've been back ever since. We worked about 2 years here as Model Cities Director, developing the plans to improve the city physically, socially, and economically. Most of the plans that we're carrying out now in our administration are plans that we were able to develop some 4 or 5 years ago through our planning staff. But that was a rewarding experience, and after getting the plans developed and getting that program funded, I went into got involved more actively in politics and helping some of the other local blacks get elected, working in their various campaigns. And I worked briefly with the United States Department of Justice for about a year to get some experience inside the federal government and find out how it works. And finally, I resigned from that post to run for mayor in April of 72, of course.
What did you do for the Justice Department?
I was state supervisor for the state, for the Community Relations Service. As you know, that agency grew out of the Civil Rights Act of 1964, and our basic role was to try to bring about voluntary compliance with federal laws, working with other agencies of government, other agencies within the Justice Department, and through local.
What year was that?
71 and 72. Of course, we were headquartered in Montgomery and served and served the state. But basically that's it. I ran for mayor I guess I announced my candidacy in April of 72. The election was in August, on August 12th, 72. We had a runoff, and the final election was September 12th, I think. And we were sworn in on October 2nd. You asked the question, Tom.
Is mayor a full-time job here?
Yes. We are a mayor-council form of government. The mayor and council members are elected at large and serve four-year terms, and it's called a strong mayor form of government. The mayor presides at city council governmental meetings. In the case of a tie, has a second vote in order to always keep government functioning. It is a full-time job. The mayor serves as mayor, chief executive, and chief administrative officer and budget officer for the city, as well as the superintendent of our utility system. We own our own water, sewer, and electrical system. Annual budgets for all departments, including our utility system, is about $6 million a year. And we have about 275 employees. So it's a full-time job.
What's the population?
About 12,000. It's an area view of our city. It's kind of spread out. We have College Town, Tuskegee Institute. We have a very large Veterans Administration Hospital. So it's about 12,000.
So far, have you been able to do as mayor what you wanted to?
Not all of the things. We have been able to make a good start, I think. Our priorities have been industrial and commercial development. As I indicated to you earlier, the things that we started planning 4 years ago, we found it wise to get elected mayor in order to be able to carry out those plans and make them become a reality. Economic development, as I indicated, had been our priorities. Heretofore, the city had not been able to get industrial expansion. All cities and counties in the state of Alabama, except Tuskegee, have not been in industry. So we've done some things industry-wise. We've got $9 million of new industry under construction and being developed. That'll mean 2,000 or 3,000 jobs for common people. This, we feel, is a significant breakthrough. We're developing a $1 million airport, which will do much to help us aviation-wise. We work with a local corporation here, Economic Development Corporation, to develop the first black-owned and managed Holiday Inn, which will be the first of a series of hotel facilities which will be needed when Congress designates Tuskegee Institute as a national historical site for black education and accomplishment. We've been working on that a long time. Tuskegee Institute, being the home of Booker T. Washington and George Washington Carver, we anticipate once it becomes a national shrine, some 50 or 60,000 tourists. Tourism is big business, and that's one area we really hope to pursue. Some of the other things that we've been able to do over the last year is we've got a $500,000 industrial park that's under construction now. We've been able to build about $4 million in worth of, well, about $7 million in total in new public housing for low-income people. Some of them are still under construction, others have been completed. We are in the process now of developing a $5.3 million sewage disposal system, which will enable our city to grow from 12,000 to 15,000. In the future. We're in the process of developing a 90 acre city lake into a recreational spot for tourism and things of that sort. In addition to that, programs for health, social services, programs for the mentally retarded, daycare programs, recreational programs, expand our police department, all of these kinds of things. We have had some success over the last year and a half under this administration. We've been able to attract about $12 million in federal programs. In state programs as well, we've been able to attract quite a bit of resources. We're well on our way, I think, in accomplishing some of the things that we have set out to do. There's still an awful lot to do. You'll never be able to do all that you want to do. I think that one of the most rewarding things about this whole effort is being able to ride around your town and see folk who a year ago were hanging out on the corner jobless, now tax-paying citizens who can afford their own homes and can take care of their families and meet their responsibilities, who have jobs and have dignity. It's kind of what it's all about. Our priority has been economic development for our people. And these new industries had about about $3 million in new shopping areas have developed. New shopping areas has done much to keep money in town and also create some new jobs. But these things have helped a lot. Also, I think what we've tried to do is bring about some attitudinal changes to instill some pride in all of our citizens, black or white, to try to be the kind of government which would be responsive to the needs of all of our citizens, in particular those who are poor and disadvantaged, who traditionally not had government being responsive to their needs. So I think that we have brought about some attitudinal change as well, from the standpoint that we've tried to be a fair government to all of our people. And I think that has done much to cause many of our people to want to work closer together. And of course, we have our problems like all other cities, you know, but I think we've made some starts.
Will the expectations of the blacks, how have you been able to meet those in terms of public services?
Well,
is there any gap between the expectations and what you've been able to perform in the last 18 months?
I think we've been able to exceed expectations. At least that's what people say. I don't know. As I said, I'm never really satisfied. But of course, you always have that feeling where some people expect a black elected official to do more than what a white one would be expected to do. And of course, you sometimes have to do that in order to satisfy people. But I've come to learn you can't satisfy everybody anyway, so you just do the best that you can. And as far as really meeting expectations, I think that we have been able in this administration, in view of the fact that it's been a full-time administration, we've been able to solve problems. We've been able to give better services. You name it, whether it's picking up the trash, keeping the streets clean, police protection, fire protection, programs for the elderly, programs for the children, paving streets, putting up 400 new street lights, medical services, a new public health center. I think that what people can see and feel are improvement in the quality of services. I think that I grew up in this town, and I can remember, when only a small section of the city received services. But now, that's not our policy. Our policy is to provide services as they're needed, regardless of what the community is or who's involved. So I think that it's not for me to say whether or not we have been able to meet the expectation. I think that only time will tell as far as how the people themselves feel. But I personally think that our city now, I know one thing, is costing us much more to run the city than what it did, because increasing costs of delivering services. So I don't know. I don't know whether or not we are really meeting the expectations.
Does industrial park effectively increasing costs by additional property taxes? Have you had to raise taxes?
What the state of Alabama is doing in general is calling for, is reappraising all property. And county government handles that. They handle the ad valorem tax structure in Alabama.
What's your tax base?
And we just get a portion of it. Our tax structure is based primarily upon privilege license, occupational tax, well, privilege license for businesses to operate on, water and sewer and electrical fees, which people pay for services. We get some from beverages, alcoholic beverages, taxes from basically, in Alabama, municipalities rely upon their privilege taxes. Of course, we get some ad valorem tax, beverages, the utility fees. Those are basically it as far as taxes, sales tax.
Have you had to raise those in the last 2 years?
We have, we've changed made an adjustment in our privilege license, which had not been adjusted in, say, 5 or 6 years. We levied a tobacco tax, I think. We plan to change our tax structure on the method of taxation on the wholesalers right now. Wholesalers are charged a flat fee. We're going to do it in the future. We're going to deal with it on a percentage of their gross. We have not had to raise an awful lot of taxes. We've made some tax adjustments. Things like revenue sharing has helped us some. And the federal grants, we, as I indicated, Macon County is a community of some $26,000. Approximately $50 million in federal resources come in here each year. Per capita and percentage-wise, we're one of the highest federally supported communities in the nation. And because of these various federal programs for recreation, for transportation, for health, and for social services, consequently, we have been able to do some things that most communities have not been able to do for their citizens, because we have aggressively sought these federal resources. However, we have had to make some tax adjustments. Revenue sharing has helped us some. We get about $250,000 a year in revenue sharing, which supplements the city budget on some. By and large, we have not had to do a lot of raising taxes a lot.
What proportion, say, of the Macon County budget is federal, state, and local?
Yeah. So our utility budget is about 1.5. General government is about 1.52, I guess, general government. And our federal programs is about $2 million. Okay, so out of 6 million, we're talking about a third of it. Our city is a model city, just like Raleigh, you know, and Durham, you know, where Raleigh is a model city. Consequently, we have been averaging about $2 million a year that we get from HUD, and of course we use that money to match other various grants. But operational wise, we get about $2 million from the federal government. Now there are other programs, as I indicated, which come from various agencies such as daycare, such as health programs, which we take that $2 million and we match, you know, some of the grants are 50-50, some are 25-75, and, you know, kind of stretch it out that way. But we average about $2 million a year that we get for operational purposes from HUD for our federal programs. So I guess we would kind of include that in.
So at least a third is federal. That'd be about one of the highest in the country, wouldn't it?
Percentage-wise.
For operational.
Percentage-wise, as I indicated to you, percentage-wise and per capita, we do have, probably the highest federal support of any community. And it's not because we're getting any special favors from the government, simply because 5 years ago, we started developing an aggressive program development team. And with our man in Washington service, what we do is, as soon as they discover the resources available, we get our proposals ready, we get our applications in, and as soon as the money's made available, we're there. It's a kind of aggressive seeking of resources to meet your needs. There are some 1,300 domestic programs available, so we just kind of have, what we've done is, I have on my staff, planning and development staff, which in turn works with planners and developers within the major agencies in the city, the health department, welfare department, Tuskegee Institute, and the planners, you know, they all work together and coordinate and they develop programs and they channel everything to City Hall and we stay right on top of it. But the whole grantsmanship game has been one of where those cities get their applications in. Well, all cities have problems. I mean, you know, all towns have problems. Just a question of working and getting your proposals in and following up on them so that that's the only way you can get things done. The federal government, the system just has not worked. It's just too slow and it's just too archaic, and so therefore, we don't get all of our programs funded, but we apply for so much, just about everything. So we get a pretty good percentage.
Well, if you apply for a program and then when you're working on trying to get funding approved, who do you work through in Washington? Is it the senator? Is it the congressman? Is it Stanley Scott? How do you operate on that basis?
Before Stan, Bob Brown, but Stan's is our man in Washington, from the standpoint that he has been invaluable. Stan and John Calhoun of his staff has been invaluable as far as following up and helping us to get various programs through. And simply what they do is if we run into some kind of a problem with the various agency, they don't necessarily use their clout, but they try to offer service from the standpoint of trying to work with the agency to see that minorities, communities get their programs through, and to see that they also are there to make sure that our programs are treated fairly. As I indicated earlier, we don't receive any special favors. All we do is we just have been getting the same type of recognition and the same type of results that white communities have been getting all this time. There was a time when some communities got things funded and other communities couldn't. So now it's a question of treating everybody fair, treating everybody on an equal basis. Our concept is if everything is going to be called, if the shots are going to be called on a fair and judicious basis, then we don't worry. We'll get our share. It's just that simple. So Stan Scott has been invaluable. Also, we have a man in Washington service, John Dingell Associates, who have offices in Washington, and they follow up on our various proposals and our programs, and they're there to help walk them through. And our planners here work with them in Washington, and they handle that end of it.
Is that the congressman from Detroit?
No. This is a private firm that we have our man in Washington serving.
But they represent you before the federal government?
Yeah. We have a contract with them to be our man. It's called a man in Washington service. What they do is, they kind of follow up on our programs. You know, when we submit them, they walk them through. They're there. If something has to be changed, it's no nonsense of sending the thing back down here. It's just they're there on the scene, kind of thing. In addition to that, we have a very close working relationship with the Alabama delegation. Senator Sparman, Senator Jim Allen, Congressman Nichols, and all of the congressmen of the Alabama delegation. Of course, we keep, we run into any problems, it's just a question of picking up the phone and their staffs as well. We work as a team with our staffs of our congressional delegation as well. So it's a combined effort. We try to explore every effort. We try to, we try to win when it comes to getting resources for our community. And really, that's what it's all about.
How do you compare with other cities and counties getting state appropriations? Non-restricted funds.
Non-restricted.
There's the general fund. How do you compare with other people in getting appropriations? Because aren't most of the state appropriations already earmarked?
Well, as you know, most of them are. However, they have discretionary grants as well, especially when it comes to revenue share. The governor spends that the way he wants it, really. I'd say even with state resources, we also share a high degree of success. We have developed a very good working relationship with the governor's office and state government. Here again, the agencies, to give an example, some of the programs for daycare, mentally retarded, recreations program, law enforcement programs, right down the list. And here again, it's taking the same kind of initiative at the state level. First thing we developed a good working relationship with the governor and his staff. And when I was first elected mayor, I went to see the governor, and the thing that I talked to him was that I wanted to see that Tuskegee got its fair share of resources. I want Tuskegee to get everything that other towns get and are entitled to. I want our city to be treated fairly. And that's exactly what has happened over the last couple of years. And we, as I indicated, though, we have been able to get more than our share, not because of any special favors, but because of being aggressive and being there on the scene. As you know, I'll give you an example of what I'm talking about. The fiscal year ended June 30th. Well, the last 2 weeks of June, we were able to get 8 out of 10 programs funded, because many agencies, the last minute, they have money left over. They don't know what to do with it. And so, some cat calls you up and say, hey, man, there's some money. So if you get me an application in tomorrow, we'll have it, so we'd be tooled up for that thing. Just in the last 2 months of June, we got funding from EDA, funding from Action, funding from mental health. And, you know, 8 out of 10 grants we just developed overnight. And so we do, as I indicated, we still are not satisfied. There's still an awful lot that must be done and can be gotten. So we're trying to continue to improve our relationship with state government. Do more of that.
When you met with the governor after you were elected, was that your first meeting with him?
Yeah, I met with the governor in, I guess, November of 68, I mean of 72. First time I had to have a meeting with him, I guess.
What was his response?
Very, you know, very, I just, very amiable, very cordial, and out of that first meeting, we developed a very good friendship, a very good working relationship with his staff, our staffs. So out of that first meeting, it's, you know, it's grown to a good relationship.
You said you worked in Humphrey Musty campaign in 68, but you endorsed Nixon in 72. Is that, am I correct on that?
Oh, yeah.
What was the basis of that?
Basis for my endorsement of the president was, number one, I was a part of the administration, as I indicated to you earlier. I worked for the United States Department of Justice, and so I was a part of the administration. While serving as a part of the administration, I had a chance to become knowledgeable of the various programs that were available, in particular programs which would benefit minority communities. So therefore, my decision was one based upon the fact that there were some good programs presented by the administration, and it was just a question of knowing how to get to them and to be able to carry them out. Secondly, I made the decision because the Democratic candidate was not, you know, no reflection on it. It just was not my cup of tea. It was not my choice. So it was a practical decision, really, an emotional one of two candidates. I'm a fella who, when it comes to parties, I don't have no strong party lines. I'm a Democrat, but I'm more concerned about individuals in most instances, platforms, especially when I make decisions when it comes to politics. I sometimes do what I think is in the best interest of my community. So basically, I supported the administration, and it was more so the administration than the president. I've never had a close working relationship with the president. I don't know the president. I've come to know him since before I endorsed him. It was just a question of my supporting the administration, which I had been a part of. And of course, none of us were maybe with Watergate or any of those things at that point. Working as a part of the administration, we didn't realize any of those things existed at that point. But it's a decision I made, and, you know, I made it. I'm not sorry I did it. I did what I thought was in the best interest of my community at that particular time.
And then this year, before you endorsed Governor Wallace,
right,
and received some criticism.
Yeah.
What's your response to the criticism you received?
Well, you're going to receive criticism whatever you do, so I don't worry too much about that. My philosophy is you do what you think is right. You do what you think is right in your heart. People can respect your right to differ, your right to do what you think is right. And, you know, I feel sorry for anybody who has that kind of a concept. But as I've said, the decision for me to vote for Governor Wallace for re-election was not a hard one for me because of the candidates running. They were all white. Of the candidates running, I felt he was the best qualified. I think that ought to be a rule of thumb when you go voters selected the candidate. Secondly, over the last couple of years, in working as mayor of this city with the governor of this state, he has been fair. He's been judicious. Our city has gotten everything any other city has. That traditionally has not been the case in Alabama, because I know every county in Alabama got industry and everything except Macon County and Tuskegee. But over the last couple of years, the governor has been fair and judicious to our city, and that's all I can ask of any governor. Thirdly, I feel that under the leadership of Governor Wallace, with his national stature, Alabama will get its fair share of federal resources and private resources. That's important, because if Alabama gets its share or more than its share, then Tuskegee is going to get its share. And, you know, so that's another rationale. And the final one is that I don't always support the party's candidate, but I'm a Democrat. I felt certainly is, you know, that the governor will be the Democratic nominee in this particular time. I intended to support the Democratic nominee. When it comes to politics, I don't believe in being naive. It's a very practical thing as far as I'm concerned. The final analysis, too, there are some things that I've got to do for my city and my people, and I need the governor's help. And he has demonstrated to me that he intends to be the governor of all of the people. He still has a long ways to go, in my opinion, but I think he's moving in the right direction. There are those who talk about the past. Well, you don't have to lecture to me about the past. I grew up in the civil rights movement. This is Tuskegee. I grew up here. I was going to demonstrations and marches and protests when I was 10 years old with my parents. So I grew up in the movement. As a college kid, I protested and marched. So I paid as much dues as anybody else in this country. But the point is, some of us have got to concentrate on the past, yet others must also concentrate on the future. I'd rather concentrate on the future, making Alabama and the South the kind of a place where my children and your children can live in peace and harmony. And it's these kinds of things that you just have to do what you think is right. Criticism, we'll worry about getting criticized. There are people right here in my city who don't understand many of the things I do. That's why the things that I do and decisions I make them, these are personal decisions. It would have been, just like my decision to vote for the governor. Was not a decision that I tried to go out and influence everybody else to vote for the governor. Simply my decision. And I told people why I did it. Now, I wouldn't expect the man on the corner, everybody to understand that or do what I did, because what I do for a reason. I do what I think is necessary to ensure the orderly progress of my city. And criticism, worry about criticism, and final analysis is all pan out. I think that all of us who are involved in this whole effort of trying to bring about justice and equality for our people, we must pursue it from their strategies. Some must pursue it through the courts and through education and through marching and picketing and demonstrating. Some of us must do it through politics. I've chosen the art of politics. Trying to bring about change.
How would you feel if George Wallace were elected president?
I think that's I'm a fellow who does not give out his comments very easily. I have no comment on the presidential race at this particular point. I think that at an appropriate time I will be able to share my views with you at this particular point. My number one choice for president, however, since you raised the question, is Edward Brooke. My second choice would be Edward Kennedy. I wouldn't care to go in for
that. How do you respond? This is a criticism that other people make of you. I'm just raising the question. But, how do you respond to the criticism that, in effect, you've been charged, and I'm sure you've heard it. you know, being opportunistic, that you allowed George Wallace to use you to further his national ambitions in return for getting favorable treatment by the state and programs?
Well, as I indicated to you earlier, people are going to say what they want to say, and especially the press, you know, the way they slant things. I think that as politicians, particularly blacks in the political game, we must be wise enough to seize opportunities, if you want to call it that. I need Governor Wallace's help to do what I've got to do for my city. If you call it opportunistic, so be it. As I've indicated to you earlier, what my reasons were for voting for the governor, that's that. And, you know, if anybody want to call it opportunistic, that's fine. But I think that the final analysis, let me just say in the final analysis that there are a lot of people all over this country, especially, you know, you got militants, black militants up in New York and Chicago, and then you got pseudo-liberal whites who do-gooders, who think they're the savior of black folks, who stand up and preach about what they're going to do to save poor black folks down in Alabama. And every time they talk about bad things in this country, Alabama is used as a whipping boy. It's the epitome of what's bad in this country. And I say to those pseudo-liberals and militants and whatever the hell else you want to call them, that, like, man, y'all take care of the problems up in New York and Chicago. We'll take care of the problems in Alabama. Because in the final analysis, some of us in Alabama are black and some of us are white, and we're going to differ. But in the final analysis, we're all Alabamians. And I think that in the final analysis, it's the people of Alabama, both black and white, who are willing to put aside their differences, their bigotry and their hatred, and to work together who are going to turn Alabama around and make it the kind of place where all of us can live in peace and harmony. So, you know, I don't worry too much about what people say. You have to make up in your mind what you think is most important. And what's most important to me is being able to deliver jobs and houses and resources for my people rather than what somebody say in the criticism. That's my gratification. That's the ego trip that I get out of it. Being able to look into the eyes of a youngster knowing that he's got food to eat. And, you know, these are the gratifications that I get out of it. If you want to say that Governor Wallace is using me, well, I'm trying to use him as well. You know, you get called an Uncle Tom, and, you know, you don't mind that. Booker T. Washington was known as one of the biggest Uncle Toms that ever lived. I feel that he has a good philosophy, and I'm trying to, I think I admire his philosophy more so than anyone else, kind of patting myself after it. But, you know,
What about the argument, though, that what the blacks need right now is political unity? What you've done is helped break up the unity which is needed in order to be politically effective.
I think that when you say unity, what blacks are beginning to realize, what blacks are beginning to realize, and what a lot of folks don't give them credit for, is that we as a people have to unify around issues. And those issues are resources and improving the quality of life for our people. Now, we don't have to unify around strategies or tactics. As I've said to you, that there are many ways that as long as we are unified around the objective of trying to bring about justice and equality for our people, then we're learning, just like all other folks in this country. Yeah, white folks ain't unified when it comes to issues. They use all kind of different strategies. And I think that black folk, I don't know who you all been talking to, but black people are waking up in this country. A lot of them are realizing that we can't all come out of the same bag. Whoever the governor of this state is, somebody black has got to be in a position to relate to that man. we can't wait 4 years from now until my candidate, so to speak, gets elected. I don't give a damn who is governor or who's president or who is in control. Black people in this country, just like all other minorities and all other people in this country, must be able to have somebody who can relate to those candidates. And just, you know, for example, all over the state, man, we get calls in here from various people, you know, hey, talk to the governor for me about this. Are we trying to get this for our community? You know, and some cats, I said, well, why don't you talk to him yourself, man? If you need it for your community, why don't you go talk to him? Well, you know how that would look. I think that's kind of hypocritical. I think those of us who are in a position of leadership have a responsibility to deliver goods and services for our community. So when you talk about unity, I think that in the final analysis, our people, like all other people in this country, are going to realize that we have to unify around issues, common issues, which affect our people. When you're talking about hunger and poverty in this country, you know, these are issues that affect black folks. I don't give a damn whether I'm a Democrat or Republican. I don't care if I'm a liberal or a militant. Unemployment, poor houses, the need for jobs, health care, and diseases which are taking our lives, these are common problems. And around these issues, I think we as a people have to unify. And I think that, you know, some people aren't going to ever see it that way, but there it is. That's the way I feel about it.
Let me ask you this. In both the case of Nixon in 72 and Wallace in 74, you had candidates who the majority of blacks in Alabama opposed. You also had candidates who, by almost, you know, there was a pretty much general political consensus, were assured of victory. If there had been serious, questionable opposition to either one, could that have affected your position?
Oh, it depends. As I indicated, if you think I'm politically naive, I don't know all about politics. I've just been in it, I haven't been in it that long. But when it comes to politics, I try to look at the situation objectively from an open mind. I told you what my reasons were for supporting the administration.